Hello, everyone. Welcome back to It's a Wonderful Podcast. We are talking more people with several people living inside them. Because apparently we like people with several people living inside them at the minute. Why do we like that, Janine?
I think it's very interesting.
Kind of is, though. You're not wrong. You're not wrong. Hi, Janine. How are we doing this wonderful day?
Doing good. Ready to talk about this movie. Very interested. Like, I just stumbled upon this movie and, I was really interested to check it out. So, yeah.
I think after last week of doing The Nutty Professor, we were looking at, like, oh, what other movies where there are multiple personalities are there? And you found this one.
Yeah.
And what is this movie?
The Three Faces of Eve from 1957.
What drew you to this one?
Well, just the fact that it was kind of an older film that tackled this issue, because I never really thought about anything like that. Like, I guess, I mean, you could say maybe Psycho kind of covers that type of thing. But this is a more kind of, I don't know, like a...
It's true to life.
Yes, it's a true story. And it deals with somebody actually dealing with it and, like, kind of talking to a psychiatrist about it and all that kind of situation.
It is not in any way a horror movie.
No. And you can see, like, moment to moment, that person kind of changing into that person. So I had never really seen a classic film that really kind of dealt with that issue specifically. And I also saw that the lead in this movie, I think it was her, Joanne Woodward,
Joanne Woodward.
She won an Academy Award for this role. So I was definitely curious to see the performance and the fact that, you know, most people who have won an Academy Award, you've heard of them or you know about their roles. But for something like this, like I'm just surprised I've never really heard of her or this movie. I guess it's kind of just like Grandpa Joe, how we found out he won an Academy Award
right,
and we had
exactly.
no idea. So
that's what I mean. I think we always tend to think that we know, like, oh yeah, they won Best Actor, Best Actress, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So we obviously know who they are and are fully aware of their work, their amount of work. But once you get a little bit older and you get into the people who won, like the Best Actor, the Best Actress, and especially the supportings for the movies that, you know, didn't win Best Picture and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And for movies you may not have heard of, you are really like, oh, who is this?
Yeah.
And that was kind of what it was like with this one.
Yeah, because this movie, this was the only nomination this movie got, was for Best Actress and nothing else.
I mean, I think it's kind of deserved. I mean, what, we're looking at movies from 1957, Best Actress. I'd like to know who was up against her, but I don't know.
And I
don't know if you can bring that up quickly.
I do have a little bit of trivia about this role.
Oh, well, let's do it then.
Okay.
Let's do some Janine's Trivia Corner. Yay! Again, we need a real jingle. It's like Wednesday. Did I have a new segment on Wednesday on Morgan Hasn't Seen that I found a jingle for?
You did.
What was it?
I
forgot what it was. I've completely forgotten what it was, but I came up with another jingle and it was essentially just, you know, my usual jingle format. We need a real jingle.
Yes. It's always just you saying something very short and that's
it. It's silly, Janine.
I like
Trivia.
It. I like it.
Sure you do. Nobody else does. Trivia.
Okay. Orson Welles was courted for the part of Dr. Luther, played in the movie by Lee J. Cobb, but opted instead to direct Touch of Evil. Welles even read the script for Eve and told director Nunley Johnson that whoever played the lead would win an Oscar.
Well, there you go. Orson Welles, very obviously a very smart man.
Yes.
But, I mean, passing this up to do Touch of Evil, you can't really fault him for doing that with how good Touch of Evil is.
Yeah.
But I think Lee Jacob does great.
He does.
To be honest with you, as the Doctor. He had a pretty good 1957, clearly, with this and 12 Angry Men.
And, like, it's very different, like... Because, you know, usually certain characters, when they play another character so well, that's, like, kind of all you can see them as.
Yeah.
And when he was just, like,
Grandpa Joe.
Yes. And when this guy was, like, you know, the grouchy, really defensive, you know, character from 12 Angry Men, I didn't think I could see him as, like, a sympathetic, caring, smart kind of therapist. And, you know, and he convinced me. So
pulls it off.
Yeah.
He does. He's very good in this movie.
I do have a little bit more trivia, if you'd like to hear.
Shoot.
Judy Garland had been intended for the main part by Nunley Johnson, but proving unreliable, he picked then barely known Joanne Woodward and imposed her on the studio executives.
Imposed her?
Yes.
That seems a bit like, let's throw Joanne, look, it's Joanne, yay. And everybody's like, whoa, chill out, we want Judy Garland. He's like, no, we can't have Judy Garland. Judy Garland's off living Judy Garland's troubled life.
Yes.
I mean, let's not be too harsh on Judy Garland there.
But she was going through some...
a horrendously difficult life.
Yes. The story of multiple personality disorder was followed in 1976 by Sybil, another story of multiple personalities. Joanne Woodward, who played Eve with the three personalities, was cast as Dr. Wilbur, the psychiatrist who treats Sybil.
Oh, so, I like that.
Yeah, so I guess it's a spiritual sequel in a sense, I guess.
Maybe Joanne Woodward just likes multiple personality disorder movies. I don't know.
Maybe. So this was
like we said, we don't know her well enough.
No. her mother actually was one of the characters from Beverly Hillbillies, I believe I read.
That's some trivia.
Yeah. So this was based on a true story. So they do kind of go into the actual traumas of, like, what split this lady into multiple personalities, the real woman.
Yeah.
So the reason for Eve's personality split as depicted in the film is complete fiction. According to People magazine article in 1989, as a 2-year-old, Eve had witnessed three unnerving scenarios within 3 months. A drowned man being pulled from a ditch, a sawmill worker sliced into three pieces, and her own mother cutting herself severely on a piece of broken glass. Too young to deal directly with what she had seen, she developed the first in a line of alternative personalities, including the three that now revealed themselves one by one to the amazed psychiatrist who diagnosed her as having multiple personality disorder. And I believe the real woman had, like, up to, like, 26 personalities, not just three.
Oh, so it's, like, split.
Yes.
Then, or with, you know, 24 or however many James McAvoy ended up having in the end.
Yes, or like even Identity, that's... where he had like 7 or 8 or 10 or whatever, how many people.
That's a lot. I mean, that it's going to traumatize you, that kind of thing. I did think in this movie, actually, the what is found out to be, or what is revealed to be the reason for the trauma, was a little bit tame.
Yeah, that she had to kiss her dead grandma in the coffin.
She had to, yeah, that was it.
Yeah.
Like, when you're 5 years old, I mean, maybe, yeah, it's unpleasant.
But I don't think it would scar you like that, you know.
No. I don't think it would scar you like a 2-year-old witnessing those three things in 3 months to do with the number three and that kind of stuff. The real Eve.
Yeah. See a man pulled out of a ditch and another man getting sliced into three pieces.
I mean, it begs the question what the hell that man was doing to be sliced into three pieces.
Yeah, in the sawmill. Yeah.
In a sawmill. Like, what is he doing? How does one get sliced into three pieces of one's own accord?
He's apparently starring in a Final Destination movie. That's what he was doing.
Possibly. quite possibly. Did somebody die in a sawmill accident or something like that in Final Destination? Did somebody get, like, cut in half by a power saw? Was there something like that?
So many crazy things in that movie, in those movies. I don't think so, but it's like, they actually did like some interesting things. Like in the second one, the sheriff and the girl survive, right?
Yes.
And the kid who saved the guy, like his arm blows off, like he gets blown up at the barbecue, and that's the end of that movie.
Oh, yes, that's right.
But in the third one, I got like a special edition, and they do like some weird special thing where like, you're at the subway station where the characters end up dying in the third one, and you're at the subway station, and like it's a special feature where you can go, and there's like, a newspaper on a bench, and you can zoom in on the newspaper, and the article in the newspaper is showing that the sheriff from the second one ran into the girl at a hardware store. And somehow there was some crazy accident and he, like, fell into, what's that thing that, like...
A chainsaw.
No.
A power saw.
Like, a thing that you put wood in and it, like, a wood chipper.
A wood chipper.
Yes. And, like, she got her jacket caught, like, in a wood chipper and he went to save her and they both, like, got sucked into the wood chipper and died. So, yeah, so then you find out, like, death completed that circle because the two survivors from the second movie died because they got sucked into a wood chipper. So I'm not sure what made me, why that, I equated that to that, but yes. Not a sawmill, but, like, people getting sucked into a wood chipper. No,
it's
a wood chipper.
It's something to do with wood.
Yes.
I think we'll accept that. It's something to do with wood. Woodward, which is Joanne Woodward's name. Yes.
Wow.
Linkages.
Very, very nice.
That
segue.
Was terrible.
That was a beautiful segue.
That was terrible. And did you find out who Joanne Woodward was up against in 1957 Best Actor, Best Actress? Was it Deborah Kerr from An Affair to Remember, potentially?
Let me look. Do some movies vamping. Do some fancy vamping.
I will just talk about the movie.
Yes.
I will just talk about the movie. Because what I really, really did like about it, it was a remarkably honest movie. Like, we often think multiple personality movies have to have some sort of horror mystery element or something like that. Or, you know, the person with... multiple personality disorder is inherently evil in some way,
and I think,
or something like that.
And I think that's what a lot of people who actually do have that disorder get really offended because it's always portrayed that way,
yeah.
That you're a killer, like in Identity and Split and things like that. And I've seen interviews
and
with
Psycho.
Yeah, and I've seen interviews with people who have actual multiple personality disorder, and they're always kind of very offended by that portrayal, and so they always have to kind of advocate people for themselves and educate people about you know, what that really means.
That's what I mean. That's what I liked about this movie, because constantly throughout this movie various characters were saying, you're not dangerous, you're not sick, you're not crazy. You just have three people inside
of you. And none of them were, like, inherently violent people. They were just kind of different
personalities. No, they were just three completely different people. Yeah. Nothing. There was no danger,
yeah.
Really. I mean, one of the personalities didn't like the other one's daughter.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing. But there wasn't any real danger. Like you said, like a lot of multiple personality movies tend to have.
Yes.
But that's what I liked about this one. It was a very wholesome movie, actually, in the end.
I mean, the worst thing, like, yes, there was the scene where she tried to, like, wrap the string from the window shade, like, around the daughter's neck. So that was the extent of, you know, but nothing like a psycho going on a murder spree or, you know, Identity,
no.
You know. Killing a bunch of people and whores not getting a second chance.
Yeah. She was the most sort of, I don't want to say evil, because she wasn't evil, was she? But she was kind of out there.
Yeah.
Sort of outgoing and unafraid to speak her mind. Like, two of them were... One of them was obviously very timid.
Yes,
And that was, like, her actual personality. Yeah. I mean, I find it a little bit questionable how one of them was called Eve White and Eve one of them was called Eve Black.
And then just Jane.
And Eve Black was the one.
Wild one. Nobody, yeah.
Mm-hmm. The wild one, you know, that liked to party and liked to go with all the men.
Yes,
and liked
course.
To nearly strangle Eve White's daughter.
Yeah.
nearly strangled, didn't actually strangle. So I find that a little bit questionable, but we'll move on from that, because I don't think it's really that.
But I mean, it's just like, I saw this video of Muhammad Ali, and he was doing an interview, and he was talking about this, like, what his mom had told him, like, you know, he was asking her, like, Mama, how come everything that's black is supposed to be bad? Like, you know, the white cake, you know, is angel food cake, and the dark cake is, you know, devil's food cake, and, you know, blackmail, and, you know, like, all these words.
Blackmail.
Yeah. Like,
you don't even think about it.
Yeah. All these words that, like, have to do with black are always kind of, like, the bad version of something, you know? So, yeah, that's, like, just what...
you have a black heart.
Yeah.
What? Why? Why does it have to be? Why can't it be a bad heart?
Yeah.
It's a fair point. It's a fair point. It's very, very accurate.
So, the Eve Black was the evil one. So, yeah, it was a crazy, wild one. But yes, I did find that list of best actresses in 1958. So,
For 1957.
Yes. So it was Anna Magnani for Wild as the Wind. Which I heard
no idea, I'm afraid.
She's an Italian actress, and I think that show we always mention, that channel we always mention, Be Kind Rewind, did a whole kind of thing on her, how great she is and how, like, a powerful of an actress she is. And she was, like, under a lot of pressure to be, you know, the ingenue and the sexy kind of thing. Okay. But she was like, no, okay. I'm going to just be an actress, and, like, just talked about a lot of her very powerful performances. So Anna Magnani, Joanne Woodward, Deborah Kerr in Heaven Knows.
Yes. Elizabeth, Deborah Kerr for another movie.
Heaven Knows. What? Heaven Knows Mr. Allison.
So not an affair to remember.
No. And she was in, I think I put the wrong year and I put 1957 and then I realized, oh no, it would be 1958. Deborah Kerr was nominated 1957 for The King and I.
Deborah Kerr's getting all the noms.
Yeah. Elizabeth Taylor in Rain Tree County. And Lana Turner for Peyton Place.
I mean, they're all good. Yeah. I mean, they're all good actors. Okay, yeah. Fair enough. I mean, do we think Joanne Woodward's performance is deserving of an Oscar?
I do. That was kind of the main kind of drawing point for me, because I was like, tackling an issue like this in a more of a realistic way at this time period, and she won an Oscar for it. I'm very curious to see this performance, like how well she kind of did these transitions from character to character, if she felt like these different people. So I was curious to kind of see all that, and I think she pulled it off really well. Like, when she kind of transitioned from each person, she felt like different people. Like, you could see the change. And she was very good at kind of embodying each one as their own person. I think it's very deserving.
I think it was easier to sort of determine who was Eve White and Eve Black, because they were like stark opposites.
Yeah. And like her body language would change and all kinds of stuff, you know.
When you threw Jane in there as well, who was the third one, who only turns up about, you know, halfway into the movie or something like that, that she's just, oh, there's a third person now. Because what is it that in one of the therapy sessions, like, Eve Black is talking and she seems concerned. So she tells Lee Jacob, something weird's going on.
Because even I'm blacking out too.
I'm getting blackouts now too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which Lee Jacob's like, let's go and get the other doctor.
Yeah.
Run, 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 run. And he's like, to the other guy, he's like, doctor, are you ready for another one? He's like, what? Another one? Run, 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 back to the other room.
Yeah.
He's like, look, there's another one. I mean, it's a little bit like, let's, from the doctor's perspectives, it's a little bit like, ooh, something new, something fancy.
Something interesting.
Hmm. Yeah. Thing interesting. The watching it a little bit like it's some sort of show in a zoo or something like that. It's just like, ooh, a case. But then it's kind of, like you said, it is sympathetic. You know, the doctors are sympathetic. They are pleasant people. Especially, obviously, Lee Jacob, who's the main therapist. He's very pleasant about the whole situation. I really liked how sort of non-judgmental it was.
Yeah, like they legit said, you aren't crazy. You know, you aren't deranged. You just are somebody with these personalities living inside you. And they never called it a disorder either.
No, they didn't actually, did they? They never called it multiple personality disorder.
They just said multiple personality. That's all they said. So that's very interesting. So I don't know if it was just kind of seen as that in that time, or if it was just like something that was done in the movie to just kind of also advocate for somebody who is dealing with this. So I don't know if they chose not to use it, or if at that time it just wasn't called a disorder yet.
Well, I honestly think this is low-key a very, very progressive movie.
Yeah. That's and why I like that. I definitely wanted to check it out, because to be dealing with these issues at that time period was like, oh, okay, I want to see how they deal with this and how they talk about it, how they address it, if they make it, like, try to make some crazy thriller out of it or something, you know.
Which they could have done.
Yeah.
They could have done. And look, we get the one character in the movie who's not feeling it at all, is he?
Oh, her husband.
He's not having anything. No. What's his name? Ralph. Ralph White.
Yes.
Eve White's husband, who can't understand what's going on in the slightest. He tries to, but then he just doesn't, and then he's constantly threatening to hit people and her. He's constantly threatening to hit her, to knock some sense into her, or some such other language like that.
Yeah.
We don't like Ralph White.
No, and like he's seen the change. Like the doctor was trying to explain it to him. He didn't understand, so he showed him. He saw it with his own eyes, her kind of transition from Eve White to Eve Black. And he seemed like, okay, he's getting it. It's jarring for him. But then, you know, over time, you realize he just really doesn't understand it. And he thinks she's just faking with him. And, like, she's just...
He does.
Yeah. And he just threatens her with violence until she's, like, the sexy Eve Black. And then he's kind of trying to be like, hey, baby, get with her. You know?
He is a little bit, yes. He is a little bit like that.
And then,
I mean,
once she kind of goes off and is doing her own thing as Eve Black, because in Eve Black's mind, she's not married. She can do what she wants.
No.
So, but then you really see again how he just doesn't understand it and doesn't get it. And so he ends up just like slapping her and knocking her down and then just leaving. You ultimately hear that they get a divorce because, yeah, he just doesn't understand. He doesn't want to understand. He's just very kind of... not very progressive in that way, so...
Yeah. That's kind of where Jane comes from as well, I think.
Yeah.
Because, like, Jane only comes in as the third personality once Ralph leaves.
Yeah.
I think. And Jane's kind of... I mean, it's... To be honest, throughout the last half of the movie... It's only a short movie as well. It's only, like, it's 90 like minutes long.
Yeah, like an hour, 30 minutes.
Jane is seen as the best version of Eve.
Yeah.
Basically. Which is why it's nice in the end that Jane ultimately becomes the one.
Yes, and the other two kind of die. Because, yeah, I liked the kind of terminology he used. He's like, on this such and such date, Eve White came to my office where she died.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you're thinking, kind of wait like, a minute, wait, what? She just died?
Yeah. So I liked kind of that terminology going into that scene of him kind of starting it with, she came to my office this day and this is where Eve White died. And then you have to be like, oh, what? How's this going to play out? So I liked kind of that whole, and even I, something I really liked too was like the musical kind of cues that they gave you, because the first time you see the transition, like Ralph takes her to the doctor, they meet, she meets him for the first time. She talks about, you know, the blackouts and things like that. And then, you know, she's Eve White. She's very kind of timid and quiet. And then you get this like saucy musical change. And then she like, she looks up and then she's like flirty and taking her hair down and, you know, acting completely different. And that's when Eve Black comes in. So I like,
she puts on the radio and starts dancing.
Yeah. So like she puts her head down and just like kind of covers her face. And then you get this swanky music cue. And then you see her kind of revealed to be somebody else. So I like how they did things like that with the music to kind of cue you to when like she's different people and stuff like that. So I thought that was a smart little kind of thing that they did in certain moments to really convey the difference in the characters.
Definitely. I mean, when it's, I think it's most impressive in like the last sort of 20 minutes or so.
Yeah.
When she's really quickly sort of changing all three of them.
Yeah.
Just because Lee Jacob's really trying to get to the bottom of the whole story.
Yeah.
As to why she is
the way,
how
she's broken up into those pieces in the first place. Yeah.
Yeah, and get to the bottom of the actual trauma, which, yes, we've already found out was just kissing a dead grandmother in the coffin, which, yes, is a little bit unpleasant, but is it...
When you hear the three things that she had to see in sequence like that in real life that broke up her personality like that, that doesn't seem like it compares it to those three things that I mentioned that really happened to the real Eve person. So
no. But it's at the most impressive, this movie, in the last 20 minutes or 15 minutes or so.
Yeah, when you definitely see her transitioning quickly in between the three characters, and you can feel the difference. Like, it's not like she's putting on like a caricature or like making fun or, you know.
No, not at all.
Being satirical about it. She's definitely, you feel like she's kind of these three people kind of fighting against each other. And yeah, I thought it was a great performance.
It's not like the Nutty Professor.
No.
in Eddie Murphy's Nutty Professor, when they are just slapping each other back to each other. It's painful for her. It's difficult for her to do. And switching, you know, between the personalities, like, she can do it at will, which I suppose is something that's quite interesting. Like, you never tend to see that either.
Yeah.
Often with multiple personality movies, it seems to be like, unless it's like, obviously, Jekyll and Hyde or The Nutty Professor or something like that, where you physically have to take something to become another person.
Yeah.
When it's just, but like Norman Bates doesn't really have any control over when he becomes mother.
No, it's like when something kind of triggers it. So like, oh,
something triggers it.
A pretty blonde woman. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I'm feeling these urges. Here comes mother to stop me from having these urges.
Exactly.
But like here, the doctor can ask for, hey, can I talk to Eve Black? Can I talk to Eve White? Can I talk to Jane? And she can just kind of like take a minute and then they come and he can talk to each person. And even, like you said, with her kind of the last 20 minutes of her really delving into the performance, like once he's kind of trying to get to the bottom of the trauma, you see Eve White kind of break down and she's like kind of howling and like, oh my gosh. And then when she transitions into another one, she's fine. And then when he goes back to Eve White again, she's still like stuck in that crazy trauma. So I liked those scenes as well, where she, you know, you got to see kind of a jarring kind of change immediately when she was transitioning.
Definitely. I mean, another thing that I just really liked about it was that it's a very, it feels a lot like a play at times. Like, it could very, very easily be translated to a stage play.
Yeah.
Because there's a hell of a lot of talking in it and very, very little actual action.
Yeah, and, like, you're kind of seeing the same two or three places.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's a serious. It's almost a melodrama.
Yeah.
With the absolute amount of dramatic talking in there, the script is probably huge because there's never not somebody talking.
Yeah. And you would think that was why they would maybe try to make it some kind of thriller or something to make it more interesting.
Exactly.
But they stuck with the story and like had confidence in this woman's story and what this actress could do with, you know, this whole kind of true story. And I think with all the talking, it was definitely interesting things and an interesting kind of breakdown of, multiple personalities and how the whole thing works. Because like I said, yeah, to that point, I feel like I want to say you hadn't really seen a true portrayal of that. And even today,
no.
It's always like psycho killers and crazy people, and it's never really taken seriously in a way for real people who have it. So,
like we've kept saying, a surprisingly progressive and honest take on mental illness.
Yeah,
it was really, really pleasant to see that, but. What I did want to say in that, you know, obviously being quite melodramatic in its level of speeches and all that sort of stuff, it doesn't have to be some sort of tense thriller to actually be a very, very gripping movie.
Yeah, a very interesting character study.
You keep focused on it throughout because you're fascinated by the whole idea of it.
Yeah.
And you're fascinated, especially, you know, you can imagine people in 1957 being really, really fascinated by the whole idea of this. They'd probably read about the real Eve.
Yeah.
You know, what the point of this. I like how the movie opens with that sort of, this is a true story.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
something you may have heard
yeah.
in the past, but in this time, it's actually real. This is very true. Do you remember Eve White? She is this, and it's that sort of introduction. It reminded me of the introduction of Frankenstein.
Well, there's
with
somebody kind of
Edward Van Sloan.
Kind of explaining.
Where he comes on and he... yes, he comes on and he says, this story may scare you. It may horrify you and all that sort of stuff. And he's just on a stage. I love it. I love that it's opened like that.
Yeah.
But it makes it feel almost like a documentary.
Yes.
Which is, again, it's very interesting. It's clever. It's very, very clever. And I know, like we said, it's based on true events. And it really, really, you know, that's just making it absolutely clear that this is a fictionalized piece of truth.
Yes, I almost forgot about that. I did appreciate that guy kind of coming on and like explaining to you that way, so you kind of know what you're in for, and it did feel more kind of realistic, more like a documentary. I don't think you got a lot of kind of things like that in movies at that time. Everything was always kind of fantastical or, you know, very obviously a movie. But this felt kind of true to life and a window into something real.
Speaking of that, though, I mean, the movie is shot in glorious CinemaScope, that I like to say. I love black and white CinemaScope.
Yeah.
It looks so good. It's so wide and just crisp black and white.
Yeah.
It's not like technical a CinemaScope. And obviously, we all love technical, but technical is a very precise type of color.
Yeah.
Where everything looks remarkably fake. But we like it for that. That's why we like Technicolor, because it just hypes everything up to 300%. And that's why Cary Grant looks like a leather football in the late 50s. He doesn't actually look like that. It's the Technicolor that makes him look like that. But when it's black and white, it's just really crisp. It reminds me of how... The Haunting. Reminds me how The Haunting shot, where because sometimes you get like really wide shots in The Haunting that's just really deep focus.
Yeah.
where just everything's in focus, and that's what this movie felt like. Again, it's adding to sort of the whole deep focus aspect is obviously adding to realism of the whole movie.
Yeah.
But I just love the way it's shot for such a simple movie.
To get the kind of sweeping treatment of a big kind of
exactly
sweeping movie. Yeah.
Exactly.
It definitely looked
it just looked beautiful.
Yeah.
As well as as being a very, very intelligent and very, very gripping movie. For having very, very, very little actual action in it.
Yeah.
Just a surprising movie, I will say. I did not expect this. I did expect more of a mystery movie, to be perfectly honest with
you. Yeah.
I expected more of a, okay, one person's here, maybe it's Eve White, yeah. Okay, Eve White lives her nice life, and then, like, there are things happening here. Almost like a Jekyll and Hyde type of situation. Like, there are things happening, unexplained things.
Yeah.
What's going on here? Who's doing this? Eve, are you doing that? No, I'm not doing that.
I wasn't there, you know.
And that's kind of almost what it's like at the start, when, before they actually go to Lee Jacob.
Yeah, her husband finds her, she bought all these kinds of fancy dresses, and she's like, I never went to the store. I haven't been there in months. I didn't buy this. I didn't buy that. And then it turns out, yes, it's because Eve Black was buying all this stuff.
Bought them. Yes. So I mean, I liked that because that's almost what I expected this movie to be.
Yeah.
But I'm so glad it wasn't that for 90 minutes.
Yes.
I'm so glad it was just a real, honest look into somebody with multiple personalities.
Yeah. Oh, another...
And the relief. The relief at the end on Jane's face when she realizes...
She can be with her daughter, she can be with the man she loves, and they're both gone. And she remembers everything from Eve White's life. So it's not like she's a completely different person with no memories. She has all the memories of everything, but can have that life of, you know, just being her, being this one person and living a happy life. So I did like that
What's the dude called?
Earl, I believe.
Earl.
Yes.
And Earl.
Bonnie, the daughter.
To be fair to Earl, I mean, when he first meets Jane, he's kind of, I don't mind. Jane, please tell me, why can't you marry me, Jane? Because I have three people living inside my head. And Earl's just like, I don't care.
Yeah, yes, I love you more for telling me. Yeah.
Like, okay, Earl. Okay, well, now you've got your nice life, Earl. Well done.
Yes.
Much nicer person than Ralph White, anyway. Yes. So we'll take Earl.
We'll take Earl, for sure. Eating ice cream, driving down the road, nice little life. So, yes.
Reminds me of Spencer Tracy and Catherine Hepburn. Guess who's coming to dinner eating their ice cream?
And he's complaining about the flavor. That whole scene is so adorable.
I love it. He just wants his ice cream.
Yes. Another piece of trivia I think I read when I was looking at things was the fact that when the actual woman was signing over like the rights to her story, they made her they made her sign it with all three different personalities. Because I think at the time she only had three, but she ended up having like way more later on. But yeah, so they made sure she signed the contract with each different personality. And when you saw the signatures, they were like all different, just to like cover their bases. So they couldn't say, oh, well, you know, I didn't agree to this. So yeah, I thought that was interesting.
God, sometimes it's fascinating like that, for the little things that you don't even think of.
Yeah.
Like, some people with multiple personalities, like, one can be right-handed and the other can be left-handed.
Yeah.
But then if you ask the one to write with the left hand, they just act completely... Like, I'm writing with my left hand. Like, I would just be absolutely ridiculous with it. But if you just switch to the other one, they'd be writing, oh, lovely. Oh, look at this lovely cursive. Everything's all over the place.
Yeah, handwriting's different and all kinds of stuff like that, yeah.
I mean, not that anybody handwrites anymore.
No, or even uses cursive anymore.
certainly.
Yeah, they don't teach us cursive anymore in school, apparently.
I was taught I was taught cursive.
Me too.
I think I was probably quite late, though, in terms of when everybody just started, oh, let's just type everything. I remember typing lessons being offered at primary school.
Seriously?
When I was at primary school, typing, I never took them, so I'm not a great typer, to be honest with you. I'm quite a, I can type well, but I'm not like, you know, I've just realised I've just done that. Because I've just shown you what my fingers do when I'm typing. Not that anybody else can tell.
No.
I sort of type with, you know, like two fingers and a thumb on each hand.
So you don't use basically. All your fingers.
I can't use all my fingers.
And like go with the pinky and stuff. Like when I was learning to type, I kind of got into that. But then, like after some time passed, I kind of just went back to my little, you know, using a couple fingers here and there.
Yeah, like it's just more comfortable.
Yeah,
it's just more comfortable, and it, to be honest, it makes me have way less mistakes, and it doesn't take that long. It's still quite quick.
Yeah.
So, but I don't know. But I can also handwrite, so I like that I can still handwrite well.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't use cursive when I handwrite. I don't join my letters or anything like that. I used to. It was weird. I don't know why I've got onto this now. When I was like 12, I want to say when I was 12, I decided to just stop writing in joined up cursive and just, you know, printing each individual letter.
But it was still cursive, but you just wouldn't connect them?
Well, yeah, it was, I mean, it depends. What do you class cursive as? Because cursive to me is when everything's joined up and flowing.
Yeah, like, just the shape of the letters and stuff, was it still kind of like that style of lettering, but they weren't connected?
Well, the way I've written pretty much has never changed. Like, the way I've written my individual letters hasn't changed. So, but when I was like 12, I just decided, no, I'm not joining these letters up anymore. I'm not doing it. It's just too ridiculous. I don't like it. It looks ridiculous. You can't read it. I mean, I write like my like long letters, like G's and J's and F's and D's and stuff like that, where it's got a long line in.
Yeah.
Are like absolutely huge, like the line's always huge when I'm writing. Some people have referred to it as drunk spider writing in the past.
Wow. There's even a and name then like for my, it.
No, like people have told me, hey, Morgan, you write like a drunk spider.
It's so unique to you that people have made a name for it.
I mean, it's perfectly readable. It's not like, you know, some sort of horrendous scrawl. But yeah, my long letters are very long, and my round letters are very tiny. Like, when I'm writing my own name, the G is huge, and the O and the R and the A
they're all tiny.
And the N are quite tiny. And then the capital M is kind of big as well, because it's capital. I don't know.
Yeah.
Uppercase, whatever you want to say.
The only time I use cursive is when I sign my name. So I guess it's not super necessary now, but, you know.
I know. I suppose people do still need to sign things, though.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know where that tangent came from.
I think just because I was talking about her signing the contract and that kind of. And
how
the handwriting looked different from each signature, I guess. Got onto.
That's true.
Type and writing.
I don't like it, though. Do you not like. Do you just, like, not look at school children today and think, you don't know how to handwrite, you type everything?
Yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah, they should learn. I mean, I'm sure they still learn how to, like, write letters, but at a certain point, they're going to just be like, and just type everything.
I had a specific handwriting book at primary school. Like you had all your books. Oh, I don't know how schooling works, not in this country. you had all your books for your different subjects, and you're like, okay, that was your English book, and all your English work was done in that book. And then this was your maths book, and all your maths work was done in that book. Like, one of the books was just handwriting. And that was the handwriting book where you just constantly practice writing the same damn words every, just in joined up cursive.
It's been far too long since I've been in school.
Oh. I mean, it's been a long time for me, you know, since I was doing handwriting books, but I still remember the handwriting book. I think it was little and red.
The detail.
It was definitely smaller than the rest of the regular books. I don't know. The movie, Janina. The yes. movie. The Three Faces of Eve. It does sound a little bit like Professor Quirrell and Voldemort, doesn't it?
Yes, it does sound like it has a sinister connotation, I think, from the title. Which is why, yeah, I was expecting it to be kind of a thriller of, like, you know, Eve is like this timid lady, and then like people are being murdered in the town, like around, and who's doing it, and she doesn't know because she has these blackouts, and then she discovers it's her other personality. Dun, dun, dun. You know, but I'm really
that's a problem though. That's the problem we've already brought up with the movie industry and multiple personality, is that it's constantly an evil psycho killer.
Yes.
And it's never actual, just like a regular human being.
Exactly.
This movie, applause, applause, applause for just being a regular human being.
And someone who's like actively seeking help and like really just having, you know, and a sympathetic therapist who, you know, understands them and is trying to really kind of get to the bottom of where it's coming from, and very sensitive to each personality and telling them they're not crazy and, you know, stuff like that. So I liked showing kind of that psychiatrist patient relationship, and a realistic portrayal, because I feel bad for people who have multiple personality, and like, you know, in the interviews I have seen, they are really kind of like, it's really disappointing that people aren't educated and they just see these things in movies and they think we're all kind of crazy psycho killers, and that is not the case at all. Like, they said something like Split got a lot of things right on, like, kind of the the fighting for the light aspect and who comes forward. And they got the kind of the aspect right of personalities kind of being brought out to help you deal with a traumatic thing.
Yeah.
So there were things that they did get like extremely right, but then just the fact that, you know, one of the personalities is always some crazy killer, like, that is not.
But then one of the personalities was called the Beast.
Yeah.
And was some sort of superhero villain or whatever it was.
Yeah.
No, I mean, when you think about Split though, a lot of the characters, you know, a lot of the personalities were just perfectly pleasant.
Yeah, who were just trying to live their life. Fashion designer. I think one was like a teenage girl. You know, one was like...
One was the little kid.
Yeah. One, like, was a teacher, like, in, like, film, like a Japanese film teacher or something like that. You know, Hedwig.
And then just like... Hedwig, the little kid, and what was Patricia... It was just the wholesome mother type person. But then you had the evil one, or the kind of sinister, was he called Dennis?
Dennis, yeah.
Who was the kind of creepy one who actually kidnapped the girls.
Young girls, and even Patricia was kind of evil in that way as well. Patricia, Dennis, and Hedwig who were all kind of like the ones who wanted the Beast to come out. And the rest of the personalities were like...
Well,
The rest of the personalities were like fighting it.
The Beast.
But yeah.
It's a good movie.
So yeah, I liked a more realistic portrayal because, you know, that usually is never really the case. Like I said, I wished that the trauma was kind of maybe something more, you know.
I wanted her to suffer.
Yeah. Just, you know, I would have liked to see the trauma be something a little more kind of, you know, intense to kind of
it didn't to make feel sense. A good enough reveal.
Yeah, it didn't feel good enough reveal for somebody splitting themselves into three parts, having to deal, like, was that necessary to deal with something like that?
Yeah.
Would your mentality really have to do something like that to help you recover from that situation? As opposed to, and then hearing the real actual situations where the real woman dealt with, they're not as comparable for that something like that to happen. So that was kind of a something that was like, okay, that's not really, you know, I wanted a little bit more from that situation, that whole reveal. Ultimately, though,
this is a super good movie and we should all watch this movie.
Yeah, it was a really kind of interesting look at this stuff, and especially for the time it came out. And I'm really happy we just kind of stumbled upon it.
And these are the kind of movies I love doing on this show. Yeah. Because we can talk about, you know, the big movies that everybody loves and everybody sees all the time, you know, on this show. Sure we can, because they deserve celebrating too. But I love it when we give a little bit more of a low-key movie, a little bit of a light, a little bit of shine some light on a movie like The Three Faces of Eve that I'd never heard of, that you'd never heard of, that I'm sure a lot of people haven't heard of. But won Joanne Woodward a Best Actress Oscar and should be watched. Yes. Because I can't remember the last time I saw a movie about mental illness, and not just like, you know, depression or something like that, which is a whole different thing, you know, in terms of all in the spectrum of mental illness, sure, but it's a whole different thing.
Yeah.
But something as severe as multiple personality dealt with like this. I've never seen that before.
Yeah.
Never seen that before. And that was just very, very
interesting.
Yeah.
And like, even like we talk about this disorder in particular, where it's kind of like always seen as like a violent thing, but a mental illness in general is always kind of seen as a evil thing in cinema, you know, as like, oh,
yeah,
this person's...
I mean, it tends to be.
Yeah.
It tends to be. There's a reason many of the famous horror killers have some sort of mental problem.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Leatherface is obviously a little bit
unstable,
slow, to put it nicely.
Yeah.
And various other people as well. But I'm not going to go through all those now, because we'd be here all day.
Yes. So, I mean, yes, mental illness and mental kind of issues, I think, make for a good starting point when you're trying to do a story like about somebody, you know, a killer,
sure,
a thriller or something, yeah, like that. But yeah, I from time to time you do need these kind of more honest portrayals, and they stand out for sure amongst these stories where you've seen kind of this idea done so many times, but in somewhat of a negative way to people who, you know, deal with this on the daily. So I liked that this was a more realistic portrayal. And I'm kind of curious if a lot of people with mental illness or with, you know, multiple personality have seen this movie or have heard of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have multiple personalities? Have you seen The Three Faces of Eve? Call us.
Yeah.
And listen to this speak episode. To us. I mean, I know I said it in a jokey way, but legit, like, that would be very, very interesting to talk to somebody actually with multiple personalities about a movie like this.
Yeah, and see what
they
think
of it. Just to see their thoughts on it.
Yeah.
Just to see what, you know, each of their personalities think about it. I mean, again, I'm not looking... I don't want to seem like I'm looking at people with multiple personalities as some sort of case in a zoo.
Yeah.
But it's just interesting.
Definitely.
It's just very, very interesting.
Yeah.
I love that this movie just takes such a welcoming and wholesome look at it, though.
Yeah.
Because when she gets over, when she gets over it in the end. It's a heartwarming little ending.
Yes.
It very really, really is. Ending. And I just like that. I like that.
And I wasn't sure what to expect.
A hell of a lot.
I wasn't sure what to expect from the ending of this movie. Because it's like, once I was getting near the end, I'm like, how are they going to close this off? Because they're still kind of talking. They're still trying to figure things out. Where is this going to go? So yeah, I like that it had a nice positive resolution for once when you're dealing with a character like
Definitely.
This.
Definitely. So, yeah. Well, I tell you what is a honest portrayal and an ultimately positive portrayal of mental health and that sort of thing. Depression that we've all seen, and you may laugh, but Thor in Avengers Endgame is actually a very, very, it's very mainstream, but it's a very, very honest portrayal of depression and fear of inadequacy.
Yes, you're right.
It's incredibly honest.
Very traumatic.
And incredibly powerful.
And in Infinity War, like, they build that up so well, because, like, there's literally a scene where he's kind of going through everything he's lost, and you don't really think about it. In all of these movies, you don't really think about it. Until he goes through losing his best friend and his mother and his brother and his father. He had a sister, you know, who he didn't know who was evil. You know, all his friends, like his whole home planet, like everything. He's lost everything. And you don't think about how much Thor has lost until he's sitting there in that moment in Infinity War going through it. And then to feel like he failed and all of this dusting and everything, it's his fault because he didn't go for, like, literally Thanos looks him in the eye and tells him this is your fault before he does the snap.
He does.
And so, like, that decline is like, yeah, it's definitely a very strong, honest portrayal of
mental breakdown, and
anxiety and depression and inadequacy, all the things you said. So yeah, that's
it really is.
Yeah, that's a very astute look. I appreciate
it. It really is. If I always grabbed, I always latched onto that since seeing the movie.
Yeah.
That it was just, it's why Thor became one of my absolute favorites in that whole franchise, because he's the most, a god can get depression and come out of it feeling, as Thor does at the end of Endgame, a complete badass again with a huge beard that's braided and
yes,
just wonderful. He's great. Obviously, at the end of the whole thing, he's just like, King and Queen of Asgard.
Yeah.
Oh no, he actually passes it on, doesn't he?
Yes.
To what is he doing now? Oh, he's with the Guardians of the Galaxy, isn't he? He's going on his post depression adventure, which is a nice thing as well that we all need to do.
And he also, I also kind of just like how they used all of that to make Dark World not terrible.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And she made it mean a lot more.
Yes, because, like, I'm sure most people wanted to skip Dark World on their whole rewatch. But, like,
no, you can't.
No. So, since, you know, I was, like, really proud of myself for watching it, because I was, like, I got a lot out of all those scenes of him just being depressed and then talking to his mother and all of that. So, yeah. I like that got onto this Thor thing. That was a really, I love that observation. And kind of how you were able to bring that into what we were talking about. I really appreciate that. So,
well, I don't know. That's just an honest portrayal of mental health in a very, very mainstream movie that everybody's seen.
Yeah. And maybe they don't really think about it the same way. Like, they play it for laughs a lot of it, but then you do get a lot of serious moments where he really breaks down and has to kind of deal with things and the conversation with his mother and all of that. And like I said, Infinity War, where you really see how much he's lost. So then in the next movie, when he's like this, it's like, it makes sense.
I just love when he's celebrating at the end.
Yes.
I do. I love Thor. He's great. yes, though. This movie is that on a way more low key level.
Yes.
In just terms of its honesty towards mental health and mental illness and that sort of thing. Which is why it's great. Applause for the Three Faces of Eve. Yay. Applause, applause, applause. Janine, anything else we want to say about this movie?
No, just really glad we kind of stumbled upon it. Different take, and yeah, I'm glad we could shine some light on this movie that maybe not a lot of people have heard of.
Well, why don't you go ahead and start off the plugs? What are we plugging first, Janine?
Oh, of course we have Machine Mondays every Monday with me, Janine the Machine, talking all things Schmodown. We'll have some matches to be covering on the episode coming next week. And next week on Morgan Hasn't Seen on Wednesday, we are starting a new series. You know, with everything going on, I definitely want to shine a light and share some of my favorite Black films with Morgan. So we will be doing Black film double features all of July.
Black film double features.
Yes.
An absurd amount of Black movies.
Yes.
Aren't we all excited? Yes, I am.
Yes.
I'm excited.
So they
may and let's not get it confused. Let's not get it confused with Eve Black.
No.
And the slightly more wild version, as this is just regular Black people movies.
Yes.
Although maybe it's not some regular Black people movies, because maybe there'll be some crazy Black people movies. And also maybe there'll be some, you know, I don't know, fantastical Black movies. I don't know. Yes. I don't know. It's Janine's pick.
Yeah, so you'll see. But yeah, so I'm kind of keep the double features in the same kind of genre vein for each week. And I think first up, we are going to be doing Glory and Lean on Me for more dramatic double feature there. So yeah, we'll be doing Black films every week in July for Morgan Hasn't Seen. I think that'll be really fun. And yeah, I don't know what we're doing next week. Oh yes, I do know what we're doing next week.
No, I don't know what we're doing. Do we? Do we know what we're doing next week?
Yes.
Oh, we do know what we're doing next week because it's 4th of July week.
So yes, because it's 4th of July week, next Friday on the main show, It's a Wonderful Podcast, we'll be covering Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, because I'm so stunned that Morgan has not seen this movie.
I know, right. I know.
I remember seeing it.
I've been
it
waiting
in school
for ages as well.
Yeah, I remember watching this movie in school and I was like, black and white movie, boring. And I really just remember really getting into it and just the passion in his performance and also
basically
Claude
all
Rains.
I know.
Claude Rains.
It's called Claude Rains. We all know Claude Rains. Yes, Claude Rains.
Yes, there's a cute little romance in there. It feels very kind of, and like even it feels very kind of like Legally Blonde in that way, where he's like kind of naive to the world of you know, politics and that thing. And then there's someone who's kind of acting like they're trying to help, but they're not really trying to help.
I just like how you somehow managed to link Legally Blonde and Mr. Smith Goes to Washington together.
Like this really sweet character who, you know, is trying to do something and, yeah, people just kind of messing with them.
Yes. Jimmy Stewart.
Yes, the determination of Jimmy Stewart.
Billy Buster.
Yes.
Which is basically all I know about the movie, I'm afraid.
So yes, I figured that would be a nice patriotic pick, and especially since it is something Morgan hasn't seen, would be great to cover on It's a Wonderful Podcast for 4th of July weekend. So yeah, Machine Mondays on Monday, talking Schmodown talk, all the matches and the tournaments, and I think there was a little bit of news that dropped. So we'll talk about all of that. Wednesday we'll be doing our first set of Black films with Glory and Lean on Me, and then on the main show on Friday we'll talk Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. So yeah, if you guys want to call in and leave us voice message, give us any of your thoughts on any of the things we'll be discussing next week, you can do that. There's always a little button to press to leave a voice message on every episode. So yeah,
there is. Oh, sometimes you'll just put out calls on Twitter anyway with a little link.
Yeah.
to leave us voice messages anyway. But yes, go and leave us voice messages on Anchor about any of those things.
Yes, and if you
want any of those shows.
If you want to see my little call outs that I usually do, you can find that on my Twitter at Janine DeBean. I'm also Janine DeBean on Instagram. If you want to get any merch for our shows or check out my artwork, you can find it all on my Tee Public shop on teepublic.com at G9 Design. If you got yourself a custom logo and you're at that tier on our Patreon, yes, you can also find your custom logo in the Tee shop as well. And yeah, we do have a Patreon as well, I just mentioned. So yeah, you can come check out our Patreon. Like I said, custom artwork. You get to know us a little bit better with fun little videos. You get artwork every month. And yeah, just a great way to support
loads of things. Live streams.
Yeah, Sunday live streams. So just a great way to support Morgan and I and all the stuff we do, you know, together in our podcasts. So yeah, check out our Patreon at It's a Wonderful One on patreon.com, or just search It's a Wonderful Podcast on patreon.com. And Morgan, where can everybody find you?
Well, you can find me at the Purple Dawn with a 3 instead of the E in the Because Janine.
3 is the magic number.
That is on Twitter, of course, and just on Instagram at Just the Purple Dawn. Find the show, find the whole feed, the It's a Wonderful Podcast feed. Like Janine said before, we've got you covered Monday, Wednesday, Friday on Anchor, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Castbox, and a whole bunch of others. We are absolutely everywhere. Or just on Twitter too, at It's a Wonderful One, to keep up with all the stuff going on. Just on Twitter, because that's nice. Yeah. Twitter's nice. We like Twitter. I'm looking forward to next week, Janine. It's going to be a good week. On the shows, and I'm looking forward to finally watching Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, because we've been wanting to do it for months.
Yes.
And for some reason we just never have done it, and then we thought, like, save 2 months ago, well, should we wait till 4th of July?
Yeah.
And to be thought, yes, let's save it for 4th of July. And I know I'm not the biggest fan of blind patriotism, so the 4th of July is a little bit questionable for me. Yes. As we found out last year when we were covering Independence Day.
Yes. And I mean, even right now, politics and patriotism are very kind of loaded issues that people feel some kind of way about. So let's watch something that can kind of bring back a little bit of that spirit, I think.
Watch something positive. Watch something positive, because we need some positivity, and it's nice. Positivity is nice, Janine.
Yes.
Sometimes. Not to ignore the truths of the world and the horribleness.
Never.
But positivity is very welcome.
Yes.
Because we need it.
We do.
Otherwise, we'll be depressed and we don't want that.
No.
Nobody wants that.
We'll become Thors.
Become Thors at the start of Endgame, which is the absolute last thing anybody wants to be.
Yes.
Okay. Yes, there we go. That is going to do it. Episode 114, I think, of the main show this, Janine.
Yeah, I think you're right.
We're racking up those numbers. You know, we'll be at 150 before we even know it.
I know, it's crazy.
We really will. It's ridiculous. I remember episode 100. What a fun time that was. Anyway, there we go. That is going to do it. Yay, celebrating, Janine. The Three Faces of Eve, 1957. Who directed this movie?
Nunley something,
I think. Nunley?
Yeah.
What a silly name.
He had a very interesting name.
We'll end with telling you all.
Nunley Johnson.
Nunley Johnson, there you go. Yes. Lovely. Lovely. Take it away, Janine.
3, 2, 1...
Bye.